So, Bob Snyder, you have a brand new album out on Borealis Records. It's called Stealing Home. How are you doing today, Bob?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you.
It's a real pleasure to have you on the phone. I've been a fan for a long time, and it's very good to see some new Bob Snyder product.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's been a long time, though. Your last album was Words and Pictures, I guess, and that was out in, 97?
It came out in early 98.
And where have you been since then?
Well, I've been doing my usual, which is going to Nova Scotia in the summer and back to Toronto in the winter, roughly speaking, and playing music, but EMI let me go. And then things slowed down, and to make a long story short, last year Borealis asked me to make a new record, so things picked up again. And in the meantime, I have a new manager and a new agent, so I have another little team and a new record, so I'm raring to go again.
Oh, you do, eh?
Yeah.
That's great. So I guess a lot of people would find being dropped by EMI to be a big deal, but do you see it that way? Because I think it might have turned out to be a good thing for you.
Well, I don't really think about it anyway. Like, generally, things I cannot control, I don't worry about. And
right.
Same with EMI. They never, they signed me up in the first place because they liked me. That's what they told me. They said, we expect to lose money on you, you know? So that's what I give them credit for.
Yeah.
And the rest is just business. Plus, I was not the most workaholic folk singer they ever met. Like, I went to Nova Scotia 6 months out every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't imagine I inspired a lot of confidence. But I figured I better not change. That's what I figured then, that I'm not going to necessarily change what I do because that's me. You know, that's what they hired in the first place. So anyway, so that's how it went. This time I'm out to do the music thing and
right.
let Nova Scotia rest for a while, if the music will have me.
Mm-hmm. Well, my only thought was that on EMI, it's a little bit easier for someone like Bob Snyder to get lost in the shuffle because you're never gonna sell and work the same way that a big EMI artist. But the switch to Borealis, I think, might give you a chance to be a bit more of a push because Borealis might have a bit more time to spend on you. Would you say that's true?
Well, I think it is technically true, but in fact, it's up to the artist. Like the company, whether it's Borealis or EMI, are there for support.
Mm-hmm.
They are not in the live music business. This is something I couldn't figure out at EMI. In other words, I was saying to them, why don't I open for some of your acts in nice soft cedar concert halls? And they would say, oh, we don't do that. You know, and I would go, like, maybe to this day I haven't figured out, you know, isn't there a relationship there? But they are a recording company, and so is Borealis. And that's what they're interested in. And the live music biz is like a whole other world, and it's really up to the artist to pursue the musical career.
Mm-hmm. It seemed to me that music was never really something that you desired to do. You kind of just ended up doing it. Would you say that's true?
I went where art took me. Like, I always wanted to turn out art, and whenever I turned out a drawing, it was never as good as I hoped it would be. And when I turn out a song, it's often better than I ever expected. So therefore, I was led more to songwriting than drawing. And then I also had a lot of acceptance in the songwriting. So things kind of carried me along. And I can't remember the question.
That's okay. Do you see a real correlation between creating different kinds of art? Because I think that in a lot of ways you do a wonderful job of that. You use poetry in your music, and you paint a wonderful picture with your words. Do you approach different kinds of art the same way?
Yeah, thank you. I do writing and drawing, and I seem to be better at writing. I always get frustrated when I'm drawing because I love looking at, like, really good artists drawing, like Toulouse-Lautrec or Degas or somebody. And I know, maybe I shouldn't say it, but I know I will never be as good. It's not much of an attitude, eh? So I'm happy to kind of look at the art and pursue the writing. I think I'm better at it.
So would you say you're confident in your writing skills and you feel that you're a good writer?
Well, when I really amuse myself, then that's a big clue that I did something right. But ultimately, it's up to the audience, because writing is communication.
Uh-huh.
So it's really up to the audience. Like when I write a new song, I try it out on the audience, and I wait and see. Like there's little parts, I wait and see if they're going to get that, or if it's going to go over their head or something, you know, here and there. And then I will adjust it. So actually, I haven't had to adjust too much over the years.
Is the audience then the ultimate judge of what a good song is?
Yeah, because when I'm out to entertain the audience, so if they don't get it, then they're not being entertained.
Couldn't there be a difference in audiences, though? Do you ever disagree with an audience?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, as far as you think something is really great, you're really proud of it, and an audience doesn't react in a certain way, does
no,
it still...
Then it undermines my confidence in it completely. It can't be that good if it didn't communicate.
Mm-hmm. Your audience, a lot of songwriters and a lot of musicians are certainly fans of yours. How does that make you feel? And sort of, does that make you approach things in a different way, or do you just assume that fans are fans and leave it at that?
No, I don't assume anything really. I am amazed that every individual that comes up to me, like artist or lay person, if you want an audience member, and say they like my stuff. Actually, musicians especially, I'm especially, of course, flattered when people who study the art tell me they like what I do. But it amazes me when every individual comes up and says, boy, I like your stuff.
And why is that? Why are you amazed by that?
Because it is like, stuff originates in the brain, you know, the recesses of my dank byways, and then it goes out into the air, hits another brain, and registers. That just amazes me.
That's pretty amazing. You certainly do have some high profile fans, though. You've had people like Ron Sexsmith appear on your records, and you even had a whole tribute concert in your honor, singing your songs with people like the Bare Naked Ladies and all kinds of people. So does that? I mean, that must give you a nice feeling to know that these people are digging it, but at the same time, that doesn't always necessarily translate into big crowds and big record sales, does
right.
it? But can you worry about appealing to a lot of people, or are you just happy with appealing to whoever gets it?
Well, the ego, the vanity part of me wants to appeal to everybody, you know? So I am really, if someone's in the audience, they don't like it. I don't care if they're 3 years old and they're cranky. You know, I feel like I failed, and I hate failing to entertain a crowd. Because apart from writing and folk singing, I'm like a giant ham. Mm-hmm. I love being on stage. I want everybody to be entertained. And some cranky three-year-old that hasn't had his nap, he counts as much as anybody else as far as I'm concerned.
That's
like when I got a roaring bar crowd that isn't paying any attention, I'm working on like building silence into the room.
Uh-huh.
I'm working at it.
Yeah.
I may not be succeeding.
That must be tough though, because I know you've certainly opened in a lot of bars and stuff before.
Yeah.
But is it harder to get your message across in those rooms than it is in a quieter theater?
Yeah. In fact, there is no way I can dominate a room without the cooperation of the audience. So if it is a noisy bar, I'm always amazed later that people will come up to me and say, oh, that was really good, or I was listening, you know. Even though I was yelling and screaming, I was listening. People will tell me that, too.
Right.
But for what I do, the audience must implicitly agree to listen to me. So it's really made, what I do is made for listening clubs and concerts rather than bars.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it's still an honor to be invited to sing in a bar. You know, it's usually because sometimes I get hired outright, not often because I'm not a bar act.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I end up in a bar most times it's because the main band invited me to open for them.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I never think it's going to be optimum, you never know. And it's always an honor to be asked.
Is it? Do you find that a lot of the fans can accept the different kinds of music? I know that. I mean, where I'm going with this is that you recently opened for the Rio Statics again, and that's actually where I first heard of you is through Rio Statics. They were big fans of yours, and it always amazed me that people who go to a loud rock and roll show often will connect with your quieter folk music, as you call it.
Yes.
You see that happening a lot?
Well, this last show I did with the Rio Statics, it was the first listening crowd I ever had at the Horseshoe, which is a big noisy bar in Toronto,
yeah,
as you
sure
may
is.
Know. And I had a listening crowd there. It was last Sunday night, I think. That was a first.
Yeah.
So it's always, I'm sorry, I forgot the question again.
That's okay. We're just talking. There's no questions here, Bob. We're just talking. The one thing, because I know that the way you certainly connected with me the most, I had heard of you through the Rio Statics and stuff, and maybe even heard a song or two. But the first time I saw you, I was just passing through a mall in Winnipeg here, Polo Park, and wandered into an HMV store, and you were sitting over in a corner playing your acoustic guitar, and just totally unassuming, and just had this marvelous way of drawing me in. And I saw a lot of people who, you know, were just there shopping for their latest pop hits and stopped and paid attention to you. And you have that marvelous way of connecting with people and really making a connection. Does that come naturally to you, or do you have to work at that?
It's a combination, I would say, because I want that. The ham in me wants it, but the intellectual part or emotional part of me or whatever has no way of doing it. I don't know how to do it. I can just do what I really want to please whoever's in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they pick up on that. But I could not attempt to do that because I wouldn't know how. All I can do is play my song.
See, it's funny you should say that, because I think that the thing that really attracted me the most was that it seemed like it was effortless for you. You were just going up there being yourself, and I mean, don't take this the wrong way, but it really didn't seem like you cared whether people were reacting. You just went up there and acted like yourself, and people did.
Yeah, thank you. Well, actually, I am like most comfortable if I'm not sitting in my room, then I'm most comfortable up on stage. Like, I'm more comfortable up on stage than I am walking into a store wanting to buy something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, way more comfortable. So I feel at home on stage, and I think people pick up on that.
How about in the studio? Are you comfortable in the studio? Because I know a lot of times that's kind of an artistic vacuum where it's just kind of, you know, beating out the same songs over and over again.
I must say I am not, but I've been blessed with wonderful producers, mainly David Baxter, because my other two producers, Don Kerr and Bob Wiseman, I just did voice and guitar tracks and left it with them, and they overdubbed everything on my first two albums, which are You and Caterwaul and Doggerel. And then David Baxter took over every musical chore in the recording of Words and Pictures and Stealing Home. So that makes me, I really don't know, other than what I do, the words, the music, the guitar playing, I don't have any ideas musically, really. I just fall back on some cliche, I cannot be trusted to arrange an album or anything. So anyway, David takes all the pressure off, plus the musicians are so great. They tell me, forget about us. We follow you. You don't follow us. So I take them at their word, and I don't even hear what we did until it's played back again.
Really?
I just do my thing into the microphone, and I forget about everything. In fact, I've discovered that I don't even try to forget. Like, I just forget. Like, even if I have a cold sometimes when I'm playing music, it seems that it goes away as soon as I go on stage and then comes back afterwards, and I just forgot all about it.
Right. Do you ever get surprised by the way they've interpreted things and the instrumentation that they've created, though? Do you ever disagree or get surprised by what they've built?
No, I do not, because I have no musical ideas, so I'm not surprised. Don Kerr, for example, he asked for my permission. He said, since you're letting me overdub, do you mind if I go a little hog wild because I want to experiment? So Caterwaul and Doggerel has that kind of crazy edginess to it here and there.
Yeah.
And David Baxter's philosophy is just to, like, he's the setting and I'm the stone or something, you know? He just wants to support without getting in the way, which I think he does a great job. Like, I just love the way he plays guitar, for example, and the musicians he hires. Like, he doesn't tell them what to do. He might suggest when to do it or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. He's got this very subtle way of doing it, and I have a very heavy-handed appreciation of what's going on, so I just am thankful that there are people to do it. It's
right.
Not me. I wouldn't know how to go about what he does.
Mm-hmm. The new album, Stealing Home, there's again, many great players on here as well. And when you play out, do you ever get to play with some of these people, or is it always by yourself? Because I know I've only seen you by yourself.
For the release, we did it at Hughes Room in Toronto, which is a big, beautiful room.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, the record company told me, the place is going to be full. So therefore, I decided to hire the band, which I never, ever do. And so we hired the band again that recorded for Hughes Room and had a lovely evening. But really, I'm more comfortable up on stage myself because as nice as the band is, I can't stop in the middle and tell a joke or whatever's going on. I'm locked into a unit, and I am not by nature a team player.
Right.
So when I get up on stage, that is my little world, and I just love it. And really, I want to grab the whole thing for myself.
Right. So you're one of those people that's actually more comfortable just playing by yourself, I guess.
Yeah, I am. I can speed up, slow down, fool around. It's like license. It's freedom.
Right. Well, I wanna pause for a second and play a song here off the new album, and then we'll come back for a couple more questions. What do you have a particular favorite off Stealing Home that we should play? And can you tell me a little bit something about it, maybe?
Well, let me see. I would go for Mayflower,
mm-hmm.
like just since you asked, because actually, obviously, I love every song on the album, or I wouldn't have recorded it.
Right.
But Mayflower was a real treat because I started writing it 8 or 9 years ago. And there were a couple of parts in the bridge that I didn't like the words. And people would ask me to play it because they'd heard it before. And I never wanted to play it because I wasn't comfortable with it. And we recorded the end of June. And the end of April, I went out to Halifax. My daughter graduated from art school. And then I went back to my property, and the Mayflowers were coming out. And I came up with a couple of lines, Lying in Mayflowers. I came up with a couple of lines for the song, which to me made all the difference. So I think it turned out really nice. Now I really love that song.
Mm-hmm. Well, here it is. Let's listen to it. Here's Mayflower from Bob Snyder on 101.5 FM.
Well, thank you.
Deep in the woods where nobody goes, at the side of the road, at the end of the snows, on the first breath of air that the warm breezes bring. Mayflower, Mayflower, promising spring. Oh, the Mayflower is delicate and the Mayflower is mild, nestling modestly out in the wild. And when it has gone, no sign where it's been. Patches of carpet of ivory and green, clusters of flowers that open and close. I love the land where the Mayflower grew. Oh, the winters are long here and bitter and cold. They're the test of the young, they're the bane of the old. And the night seems unending, but the day will begin when the Mayflower welcomes the morning again. Oh, the Mayflower is tiny and the Mayflower is brief, and the sight of the Mayflower is such a relief. Oh, the hours I dream of, the moments I've spent lying in Mayflower's heavenly scent, lost for a while to the world and its woes. I love the land where the Mayflower grows, where the wood smoke still rises and the fresh water flows, across Nova Scotia where the Mayflower grows.
That was Bob Snyder on 101.5 FM. We're back talking with Bob Snyder, who's in Toronto. And Bob, are you going to be touring with this record?
Yeah, I hope so. So far, I've been running around Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just talking to my manager today, and he says, we're talking about going down east in March. So nothing's definite yet.
Right.
And also talking about going out west maybe before that, which I hope to.
Well, if there's anything that we can do to make that happen, because it's about time that we saw Bob Snyder headline a show here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'd love to.
The last time you were here, I think, was at the Winnipeg Folk Festival in 1996. Would you say that sounds
was
about right?
Was it that long ago? I didn't think it was that long ago.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
We are definitely due for another performance.
Okay. I thought it was more like 98, 99 or something.
No, you actually signed my CD at the time, and you always write the date on there, which I think is really
goodness.
Nice. It helps my vague memory as well.
Yeah.
Have you been playing folk festivals since then a bunch? Because I know you did a bunch that summer, but...
Yeah. Well, no, things slowed down around 99. I think in 99... One of those years in there, I did 7 1 year, and that was pretty good. And then the next 2 years, bringing us up to, like, last summer, I did, I can't even remember, a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did maybe one the year before or something like that. And maybe one or two the year before. So when EMI let me go and there was nothing much doing and things slowed down.
Do you have an ideal venue? Are you happy doing... Where are you happy? Just folk festivals or theaters or...
Theaters.
Yeah.
Theater is my world. A soft theater, because there you have that tacit agreement with the audience without a word being said. They know all they want to do is sit quietly, face front, and be entertained.
Mm-hmm.
They already ate. There's no cash registers going. So undoubtedly, soft theater venue is my personal favorite. And second favorite would be a listening room. I've had a lot of good shows outdoors, but I have a sort of thing. I feel like if there isn't a wall to bounce it off, I
mm-hmm.
feel it just goes out and disappears somehow. I can't explain it. I find it hard to build with an outside crowd.
I actually sort of remember you saying that in 96. You were a bit uncomfortable playing outside, but it was funny because a lot of people certainly thought that, again, that you were most comfortable there. And
I know. The audience doesn't pick up on it, usually. It's my own feeling. I feel like it just goes out forever and ultimately dissipates in the atmosphere.
Right.
That seems to make a difference. I like bouncing it off a wall somehow.
Do you have any idea what it is about your songs that connects with people the way they do?
I really don't, and I should probably remain in ignorance.
Would that, do you think that would ruin it if you knew?
Oh, yeah. I would never dissect or investigate or wonder. Nah, I would never even think about that.
Can you ever write a song thinking that people are going to like it, or you just have to write it and see what they think?
No. When I'm writing a song, like, often I don't even realize I'm doing it. I'm just amusing myself. And then I realize, you know, this is turning into, you know, it's beginning to take shape. This could be a song. And then I'm still amusing myself, but there's that first bit of effort involved. And then presenting it to an audience is another facet. Like, usually I think they're going to like this, but I don't really know till I try it.
Mm-hmm.
And some that I don't think that much of, like Sitting in the Kitchen and Rejection Blues, just to pick a couple.
Mm-hmm.
They're very popular, and also one called The Auto Bottle Friday Night.
Some of my favorites.
Yeah, really, eh? Well, to me, I just tossed them off, and I didn't think much of them at all, and I felt guilty pulling them out and foisting them upon people.
Really?
But people like them and request them, so.
That's funny. You have a kind of a real... couple of different varieties. You have the kind of fun and often silly songs, but there's also some really beautiful and touching songs as well.
Yeah, thank you.
And is it hard for you to mix those two things together?
No, it's easy. Like George Bernard Shaw or somebody said, somebody asked him, is it hard to make art?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, it's easier, it's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that. I always find it easy or impossible.
Right. Because I know a lot of people have trouble if they kind of write goofy and funny songs, that the other ones aren't taken seriously, and vice versa. If they write really serious and sad songs, then
yeah,
the funny ones kind of stick out. But you have a wonderful way of connecting those two things.
Well, I find that the people pick up on the goofy ones. That's
yeah.
what people like. Like I have, if I can tell you on Stealing Home there,
mm-hmm.
are the two most popular songs I ever wrote by 100-1 in terms
dog.
Of requests. Yeah, Dog. And the second one by 50-1 is How to Build a Fence.
Really?
The two most, they knock everything else right off the map. So if I was going to get frustrated about that, I would be quite frustrated. But if people like it, then I like it.
How do you
enough people like the ballads that I'm
yeah.
gratified.
Right. How do you approach your art? Where do you get your inspiration from?
Well, except for one or two instances in which I was given a topic to write about or agreed to write to order, other than that, I never pick a topic. I'm just walking down the street or working or doing something, and a line will pop into my head, and I'm off. You know, a line of music and a line of words.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm suddenly writing a song. And like I say, sometimes I get halfway through it and I don't even realize it's a song. I'm just playing.
Do you have to labor at your songs?
I think what people like is the playing, and that's what I do. I just play.
Yeah. So do they just kind of come naturally to you? Do you ever have to labor at them and fix
them
up?
I do. Some of them, like I might get a whole verse pop out or two verses, and then I stop at the bridge because I'm stuck. There's one I've got called Ash Hash. Is the fastest song I ever wrote. Like, it was written before I could physically write it down. And
oh,
I
really?
Was just rushing, hoping I wouldn't forget it. And other songs take the exact opposite of that is one called Talk to Me, Babe, where every word is heavily composed over about 6 months. And the beautiful thing to me is if you sing them both, you can't tell really which I rattled off and which I composed.
Really?
Like to myself, I
yeah.
think of two ways I write songs. One is I make them up, and the other is I compose them.
Are you prouder of one than the other? Do you?
No. I'm amazed that I can compose. Like to me, just rattling off, you know, as fast as I can before I think about what I'm doing, like Parquette, I wrote half the song. I don't even know if you're familiar with these songs
oh,
I'm
yeah,
talking about.
Definitely.
But Parquette, I wrote half the song, and then 18 months went by, and I wrote the other half. I never really, I thought of it every once in a while in between. So I just rattled it off.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think much of that because I don't notice it happening. I mean, it just happens, you know? And so I guess I'm more proud of the ones that I sit down and put effort into and compose.
So do you have any real favorites that stick out in your mind as songs that you're most
proud
of?
Oh, yeah, all kinds of them, because a lot of them mark moments. But two that really pop up, well, three, no, I'm going to start thinking of more, but I'll take three.
Yeah.
He's an old Nova Scotian,
mm-hmm.
which I had made notes of several years before of this incident that happened, and then I discovered them several years later and started playing around. And Have I Ever Told You, Darling, just sort of popped into my head, and I love that song. And I thought it was something I heard on the radio when I was singing it to myself. I was
right.
sweeping a floor and singing this song, and then I started wondering where I heard it because I couldn't go any further.
That's funny.
So anyway, and Anna Marie, which was a magical song because... when people heard, like I love, Anna Marie took me about 6 weeks to write, and I swear every waking moment of those 6 weeks it was just running around my head,
uh-huh.
and it was a magical kind of springtime period. I was just intoxicated, And the audiences really liked Anna Marie from the start. And also, of course, What an Idiot He Is was a big hit from the start.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one I just tossed off and didn't think that. Well, I liked it very much. But it didn't, you know, it was a good, solid song, I thought. But for Magic, Anna Marie, Have I Ever Told You, Darling?
Anna Marie is one that's been around for a long time. A,
yeah.
How did you know when it was done? And B, how did you know it was time to record it and put it out on this record?
Okay. Well, that's sort of a whole story. How did I know it was done?
Yeah. Like you said, you labored at it for a long time. How do you know when you don't have to work on it anymore?
Okay. Well, when it got too long. Like, I actually, there's another verse in there that I took out. I just thought it was getting too long. So I finished it. And then it got recorded because Bob Wiseman was kind enough to offer me help making a demo, what he called a demo back then. But it turned into a full arranged album called You.
Mm-hmm.
And then David Baxter hired Bob Wiseman to play piano on this album. And the second day of recording, we recorded for 2 days. I came in that afternoon, and he said, I just had this idea. Bob Wiseman's here. Why don't we ask his permission to re-record Anna Marie? So I said, okay. So we did.
Well, it's a wonderful song, and I'm glad that a lot more people are going to get a chance to hear it now.
Oh, well, thank you.
Certainly one that I've always enjoyed.
That always gave me a great feeling.
Yeah, so what's the future look like for Bob Snyder?
Well, I mean, I don't really know. I have no great plan, but now I have, like I said, a team again. I got an agent, manager, record company, new album. I feel raring to go.
Yeah.
So we're just going to try and push it as far as we can, I guess. And other than that, I'm happy. My daughter is doing well. Everyone I know is okay, you know. That makes me feel good. My little place in Nova Scotia is coming along. My neighbors keep an eye on it for me.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's rooting for me, you know, like back home in Bear River and in Toronto. And, you know, it's pretty darn good.
It sure is. And it's good to have you back. And I hope that you're in for the long haul and we hear lots more music from Bob Snyder.
Yeah, thank you. I love doing it. If anyone wants me, so.
Well, we certainly hope to see you in Winnipeg, and I hope that everybody in Winnipeg goes out and picks up Stealin' Home by Bob Snyder. It's out on Borealis Records. I'm sure it's in record stores everywhere, is it not?
I hope so.
It sure is. All right, well, thanks, Bob. Is there anything you'd like us to end with, a particular another song?
I can't think of anything off the bat.
All right, we'll just have to surprise everybody. So,
okay, except to say thanks for taking the interest.
Well, thanks for talking to us. It is a real pleasure for me, and it's great to have you on the show. So,
well, thank you very much.
Here's one more from Bob Snyder on 101.5 FM.
Anna Marie, Anna Marie. We met across a crowded table somewhere. I couldn't say a word there. I tried so hard not to stare. I thought I saw you, maybe give me the eye. I wondered who was the guy sitting beside you. Anna Marie, Anna Marie. I asked a friend of mine if you were alone. She said she didn't know, but she thought so. She gave me your number and I gave you a call, but all I got back was your answer machine. Anna Marie, Anna Marie. We met a few days later out in the street. You seemed happy to meet. We went and had something to eat. We talked a bit about the things that we like. You told me horses and your new mountain bike. Anna Marie, Anna Marie. A band of street musicians started to play. The air came alive in the outdoor cafe. The waitress smiled as she balanced her tray and did a little dance all the way down the aisle. Anna Marie, Bonham Reed. For the rest of the day, we wandered the town where the bag lady lies, where the bus turns around, where the car radios, where the windows roll down, played a Beatles song that makes me think of you, Anna Marie. Anna Marie. Well, the money comes in, but it's so hard to hold. If you got it, you're hot. If you haven't, you're cold. The Royal Tower may be made out of gold, but all I see in it is Anna Marie. Anna Marie. Anna Marie. Well, you may be now, I have no way to know. You don't say anything, you just pick up and go. There's an ache in your heart, babe, and it's hurting you so. But I know you're the first to laugh about it all, Anna Marie. Anna Marie. Anna Marie.